Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 46. My name is John. And all of your friends are now whispering, "I think you left me for their government." And all of your friends, I hope, are listening. I wish you'd stop sucking all my energy. I just want to get this out of the way right off the bat. I love Collective Soul. They are one of my favorite bands. I literally own everything they've done, and I've seen them live half dozen times at least. I'm obviously playing off their name for the title of this episode because it fits the topic, but I don't want that construed as not liking their work. I love Collective Soul. Okay? Cool. I give a lot of hell to collectives, and even though I've said this before, I want to make my position perfectly clear. I think collectives could work. No, seriously. Here's how. Small groups of people getting together with a common ideal can work. If you and a couple of your close friends want to get together, buy some land, cultivate it, and share in the harvest, you could probably make it work. Why? Because you can all agree on how to work together. You can develop checks and balances with each other and make sure everyone stays on the same page. But that's not how collectives operate. What happens is, a group of people gets together with a common ideal. They find out it works for them, and makes them happy. So they say to themselves, "Hey, this is great for us, so it must be great for everyone." Then they proceed to influence authority, or even take power themselves, and force people to conform to their ideology. And that is where I have the problem with collectives. This one particular collective, forcing its ideology on people, is one I've droned on about quite a bit, especially over the past year. And I'm just about to a point where I'm tired of even thinking about it, because it just keeps rearing its ugly head. It's something that affects people that I care about, and I have friends and family on both sides of the argument, sometimes taking extreme positions. The past month there's been even more talk about it, so I just can't avoid it. Hopefully I can talk enough about it this time so I can get away from it for a few months. So strap in for a half hour or so, because I'm once again going to talk about gay marriage and the collective of the religious intolerant. To start, I'm going to read a recent article submitted by Thuy Ong from Reuters via the NBC World News website. My apologies for any name butchery. This is why you don't want government to sanction your lifestyle. Here's the article. The honeymoon was short-lived for Australia's gay couples who married in the past 5 days after the High Court overturned new same-sex marriage laws on Thursday, invalidating wedding ceremonies performed since Saturday. This is devastating for those couples who married this week and for their families, Australian Marriage Equality National Director Rodney Croom said in a statement. Around 20 gay couples had tied the knot since December 7th, when Australia's first same-sex marriage laws came into force in the Australian Capital Territory. The first ceremonies were celebrated a minute after midnight. I don't want to be unmarried this afternoon. Ivan Hinton, who married his partner Chris Teo in the national capital of Canberra, told Australia media outside the High Court. Australia's Conservative national government had challenged the law in High Court on the grounds it conflicted with federal law. On Thursday, the court upheld the challenge and unanimously decided that the Act law was invalid. The court said the issue of same-sex marriage was a matter for the National Parliament. Laws to legalize same-sex marriage failed to pass in the National Parliament in September 2012. This is just a temporary defeat, said a defiant Croom. What is far more important is that the Act's law facilitated the first same-sex marriage on Australian soil and showed the nation the love and commitment of same-sex couples, he said. Other countries where same-sex marriage are completely legal include Canada, Spain, Sweden, and New Zealand, which in April became the first country in the Asian Pacific region to legalize same-sex marriage. That's why you don't want government to pass a law in your favor. When that happens, you also give them the power to take it away from you. Government should have no say in consenting adults getting married. Yes, I am saying that there should be no law regarding adults getting married. All laws regarding prohibiting same-sex marriage and all laws regarding polygamy should be gone. I've been trying to get people to understand that you don't want the government to approve same-sex marriage. You want the government to get out and stay out of marriage altogether. This is why. When you ask the government to sanction your marriage, you then give them the power to take that sanction away. Marriage is between you and the person or people you want to marry. If you're so disposed, you may also wish to involve your God in your marriage. And if you do, I think that's great. But that's where it ends, because that is all who you should have to answer to. You should never have to justify the legitimacy of your love to government or some supposed moral majority. And one particular quote from the story. I don't want to be unmarried this afternoon has got to be the most disheartening thing I've read this past month. How compliant must you be to have a politician defeat you? Rather than asking the government, may I marry this person, people should be saying, I'm marrying this person whether you like it or not. And that really is the dividing line. I don't care if someone disagrees with homosexuality or bisexuality. I don't care if they don't like open marriages or consensual non-monogamy. Those people can believe whatever they want. Hell, I don't even mind if they tell me how much they disagree with the way I live my life. In America, you get to believe what you want, and you get to express that belief with your freedom of speech. But the line is crossed when the collective says, we know better than you. They cross the line when they try to make gay marriage illegal. Remember, it wasn't all that long ago where anti-sodomy laws prevailed across the country. The line's been crossed for quite some time. Thomas Jefferson wrote a law for the state of Virginia that made sodomy punishable by castration. And that was seen as a liberalization of the existing punishment. That's how bad it was. Castration was viewed as being too lenient. It was about only a decade ago when the Supreme Court struck down the last of the anti-sodomy laws. Before that, there was still this notion that you could pass a law to force people to conform to your morality. Just kidding. That notion is still prevalent today. Now, there is a huge difference between disagreeing with something and being hateful and phobic about it. Disagreement does not equal hate. And that line I mentioned is where it goes from disagreement to hate. If you disagree, you disagree. If you try to force conformity, you're being hateful. Not everyone's going to agree with everything you believe. Grow a thicker skin and get over it. No matter what you say, someone is going to vehemently disagree with you. If you can't handle the backlash, don't make the comment. And if you lash out at a person on the opposition who makes a controversial statement, then you should lash out at a person on your side that makes similar statements. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite. If you support a person on your side who makes a controversial statement, then you should support a person on the opposition who makes similar statements. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite. If you work for a private company and you say things they don't like, they have the right to discipline or fire you. If you don't like it, you shouldn't work for them. This whole Duck Dynasty crap is just like the wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl a few years ago. Half the country is going into a tizzy over one exposed boob. Seriously, the backwoods duck hunter from Louisiana has every right to say what he believes. I think he's wrong. But I'm not going to get in the way of his opinion. As far as I know, because I'm so tired of hearing about it, I don't even bother to look it up, he's not introducing or advocating any law that prohibits gay marriage. If he was, I'd be fighting that. But not his right to speak his opinion. A&E has the right to suspend or fire him if they want. They are a private company and can discipline employees as they see fit, even if it's inconsistent. If I said something in the media that pissed off my boss and she fired me, that's the consequences of speaking my mind. See, you have the right to say what you want, but you must face the consequences and backlash of your actions. That being said, Andy Levy made a great point on Red Eye that A&E knew what they were getting into with this family. His beliefs are well documented. It was only a matter of time before his opinion on this specific subject became widespread knowledge. I say widespread because you can go to YouTube and see videos posted before the show ever aired where he expresses his hardcore stance. If the network didn't want the controversy, then they shouldn't have hired the family to do a show. And that's the key, isn't it? When I first read Brad Meltzer's Identity Crisis, one of the things that stuck out was the quote, "It's the first rule of solving a crime. If you want to know who did it, you need to find out who benefits." Now, I know he's not the first one to come up with that, but it was the first time I thought of it in that way, and I know that this is certainly not a crime. At least not yet, if the thought police would have their way. But I have to ask about this whole Duck Dynasty controversy. Who benefits? GQ published the interview. Once again, credit to Andy Levy. It's funny that they don't ask left-wing stars such questions. They would only ask that because they knew what the answer would be. And just like the Boston Marathon bomber's interview in Rolling Stone, the controversy boosts sales. A&E, after suspending the guy, reminds everybody that their Duck Dynasty Marathon is coming soon. Think the people who fear the show is going to be canceled are going to miss the chance to see their beloved duck hunters? The ratings go through the roof. Merchants are talking about how they're sold out of Duck Dynasty merchandise. Oh, wow! Who could have possibly predicted there would be a major groundswell of support like Chick-fil-A experienced earlier this year? Gee, I wonder where all the money goes for the merchandise. You think the network and the family are both happy about the surge in profit? All this for a TV show that was due to jump the shark, suddenly finding an outpouring of supporters. All those collectivists who love their stick their nose in everybody else's business, who fret that people just don't pray anymore, who decry the erosion of traditional family values, who fear any lifestyle that doesn't conform to their narrow vision of how we should all behave. What happens with them? Well, when A&E concedes the freedom of speech, while condemning the message, and proudly announces that Duck Dynasty will remain on the air, all those collectivists get to declare victory over the evil anti-family crowd. The magazine wins, the network wins, the family wins, their supporters claim victory. It's almost like they planned it that way. Not that I'm being cynical or anything. Now, if the phrasing of the last few sentences seems a little bit strange, it should. See, I wrote those on December 26th, after Gina and I had a long discussion about how sick we were of hearing about the controversy. As you know, A&E has conceded, and the neoconservative religious collectivists have declared victory. And I gotta admit, I am kind of proud that I thought about the whole Chick-fil-A connection, because if you've been paying attention, there's also plans for a crossover with Chick-fil-A on January 21st, because there's nothing that these collectivists love more than to revisit and remind people about their past victories. Of course, while all this BS was going on, the NDAA was quietly re-upped by our government, which the neo-religious collectivists don't care about because, I don't know, terrorism? I used to be a Christian. I used to think it was okay to make the government define marriage. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There are over 40,000 different Christian denominations. 40,000 different definitions on what it means to be a Christian. Now, even if you pare it down to just the major differences in biblical interpretation, you still have at least a dozen or so different branches. But there's no consistency in the branches. There are contradictions on what it means to be a Christian and what one must do to be saved. I've talked about some of those contradictions in a previous podcast, so I won't go into them here. But the point is, there is not a single definition of Christianity. Before banding together to use an agent of force, the government, to advocate for your definition of marriage, you ought to be deciding amongst yourself first what is the definition of Christianity? Or, as I've also said before, if Christians get to decide the definition of marriage, then gays should be allowed to decide the definition of Christianity. It's only fair. The state of New Mexico actually got it right recently. Their state Supreme Court concluded that the government couldn't interfere with marriage because to do so would violate the Equal Protection Clause in that state. In other words, it just told the state to stay out of people's personal lives when it comes to marriage. That's how it should be. But, of course, that news did not sit well with everyone. I had a very frustrating discussion with a person who I've had discussions with before about other topics, specifically marijuana legalization, because we both support it. But we're on polar opposites of gay marriage. He thinks that it is very much the government's responsibility to force the definition of marriage and to bring back anti-sodomy laws. He preferenced his remarks with, "I'm not going to hide behind the Bible here." And then he rambled on about Sodom and Gomorrah and how that was going to happen in America, and the hardline Old Testament stance against homosexuality, and that is the biblical truth, and anyone who turned a blind eye to that was not a real man. You know, one of those soft, cuddly types. My response was something like this. It's very difficult to believe that you're not hiding behind the Bible when your entire argument is based on Old Testament teachings and the irrational belief that fire and brimstone will rain down on America. I would expect that if such a thing were to happen, it would happen first in Israel, which is more pro-gay than half the United States. If you really want to impress me with your religion, you could cite the scripture where Jesus forced people to conform to his teachings. I'll save you the trouble. He doesn't. He lets people choose for themselves whether or not to follow him. Figure if the Son of God can grant people the freedom to decide for themselves, then so should I. And yes, marrying whom you wish is a freedom. Distilled to its essence, marriage is one's right to associate with whomever you want and to enter into private contract with whomever you want. The former is a right we take for granted in this country, but the violation of which can get you killed elsewhere in the world. In America, you're supposed to have the right to live how you wish as long as you are not violating the rights of others. A neighbor who shares their life with a person of the same sex is not violating my rights. Therefore, I'm going to stay out of their business and let them live their lives as they see fit. This is similar to the argument I would use to support your right to put whatever substance you wish into your body, even though others may find that morally objectionable. And I will support your freedoms, even though I may disagree with how you exercise them, because I'm not a hypocrite. Fact is, I don't really care what you believe about homosexuality, any more than I care what some reality TV star in Louisiana or leftist politician in San Francisco thinks. You get to believe what you want. But I'm going to stand against any effort by these collectivist cowards who try to use any level of government to force conformity on others because they're not manly enough to live and let live. Furthermore, I'm going to celebrate when some level of government, like the state of New Mexico, gets it correct and gets out of people's personal lives. I probably shouldn't have thrown in that manly dig in there, but it is what it is. He didn't have an answer for that. not surprising. There really is no argument unless you concede that the government has the right to interfere in your personal life. And if you concede that, then you must concede that the government has the right to other areas of your life, like whether or not you can smoke marijuana. Do you know what happens to the neocon religious collective if gay marriage is legalized tomorrow? Nothing. Not a damn thing. They still get to believe it's a sin. They still get to speak out against what they think is wrong. I can't fathom why, but they seem to think that if the law changes, they're going to be forced to wake up next to a person of the same sex. No, you still get to believe what you want. You just don't get to force your will on people who don't believe what you believe. Just like that crap that happened in Colorado where the cake baker was forced to make a cake for a homosexual couple. The baker's a jerk and an anti-capitalist. But that's his right to do so. If he refuses to make you a cake because you're gay, you don't sue him and force him to do it. You make his decision public so people like me will know not to go to his shop, and hopefully he'll lose business. Just like the Christians ought to be out of the gays' personal lives, gays ought to stay out of the Christians' personal lives. And I've told this story before, but don't give me this crap that all Christians are like that. Sure, it may seem that way sometimes, but it's not. If my strict fundamentalist Christian mother can hug me and tell me she loves me no matter what when I come out of the closet to her, then you know there are exceptions. Make sure you acknowledge the good ones out there who truly do take their entire holy book to heart and embrace the teachings about love and tolerance and not just cherry-pick the ones that give support to their prejudice. And that's the message I have for that collective. That's what really gets to me. This is why I left Christianity. Well, one of the reasons anyway. I wish I could say they were an anomaly and my mom was the common reaction, but it's not. This collective cherry-picks the pieces of their scripture that support their bias against alternative lifestyles and completely ignore anything regarding love and tolerance and forgiveness. I'm sure that gives them comfort that they've somehow struck a righteous blow against that evil they fear. But while they rejoice in the denial of somebody else's rights, somewhere out there right now, some other collective is seeking to take away the rights of the neoconservative religious collective. Maybe this other collective is trying to deny them their religious freedom, or their right to bear arms, or some other cause they hold dear. When they hear about it, they'll find it disgraceful. They'll rant and rave against those who dare to take away their God-given freedoms. And I'll be there. And I'll remember those times I've dealt with them. I'll remember their supercilious attitude. And I'll remember them questioning my manliness. I'll remember the venom they had for my friends who just want to be able to love who they want. I'll remember that when the tables are turned against their freedoms. And still, I will fight for them. I will stand for your right to live your life as you see fit and work to protect your freedoms even when I completely disagree with you. Because that is what libertarians do. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. you'll hear from me again.